You're listening to Diffuse Tap with Kenny Estes and Isla Krem. In the alternative investment world, companies, GPs, and LPs unlock new levels of success when they work together as an ecosystem. This week, we'll be talking to Jennifer Vanzini, general and founding partner at Mighty Capital and one of the most successful community builders in VC. Enjoy. All right, everybody, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed your little chin wag while we were getting things in order. Coming to you live, at least for me, from Miami today. Some of you might have met me last night out and about in an in-person version of this. But for those of you who don't know, here's what you can expect for the next hour or so. I'm going to ever so briefly talk about Diffuse Tap at Diffuse, what we do and why we do it. And then we're going to do a fireside chat with the speaker of the day, who is Jennifer Vanzini. And then we're going to do two more breakout rooms, kind of similar to what you just experienced. And the reason is because, well, Diffuse Tap is first and foremost a networking event. We spend about 45 minutes of our hour every time in small groups of four or five just to, well, let serendipity do its thing. So I think a lot of you, that's why you're here. But we do like to have you come away a little bit more wise. So we do have an expert speaker talk about something in alternative investing. And today is Miss Jennifer. And then we have also periodically, about once a month, an in-person version of this. Fewer expert speakers, more beer and or drinks. But the next one is in New York on December 9th, hosted by Tarun. So if you're going to be in New York at that time, want to see some of the people that you meet only virtually in person, that's your chance. Why do we do this? Well, Diffuse is first and foremost an alternative fund incubator. We try to find high alpha, more esoteric investment strategies and turn them into institutional grade funds. Two of them that are live right now and actually we launched probably 4 or 5 months ago are MaxFi and StableFi. These are two decentralized finance or DeFi funds where we're doing yield farming. Some people might call us degens, but we try to generate a solid yield for people that want crypto exposure or people who don't. StableFi is no crypto exposure, MaxFi is all crypto exposure. So that's what we are, but that's not why you're here. Today's speaker is Miss Jennifer Vanzini, general and founding partner at Mighty Capital. Jennifer, I'm really bad at introductions. Would you mind unmuting yourself and doing a brief intro?
Sure, thank you, Kenny, and good morning, everybody. I recognize a few names here. I'm kind of scratching back into my brain fog memory. So nice to meet all of you for the first or second or third time. And I'm excited to be here. As Kenny said, I'm a general partner at Mighty Capital, and we're an early growth venture capital firm based in Silicon Valley, investing primarily in Series A, Series B, a lot of B2B tech. We're in companies like Amplitude, DigitalOcean, both of which went public in the last year, 9 months. So those are two examples of companies that we're in. A portion of our investing is also in health tech, mostly AI and data as it relates to health, not therapeutics, fintech and blockchain. And we separate those out because of the dynamics of those industries and kind of the regulatory landscape there, which is very different from B2B SaaS. Before I became a full-time investor, my operational experience was building ecosystems. So I've done corporate development, strategic business development, either in startups or in the kind of digital transformation group of large companies. So I've worked for Telefonica, Pricewaterhouse, Nokia/Symbian, if anybody remembers that in the early days of the smartphone landscape. So a lot of my background, sector-wise, was in security and mobile. And I actually worked for an encryption company in 1994 through 2001 before crypto meant money. So in the early days of defining those basic algorithms, making encryption a household name, nobody knew what it was. And some of the people I worked with there are very active today in the Bitcoin cryptocurrency landscape. So it's a bit about me. As an investor, what I look for in companies, other than the basic things we all look for, you know, team, product, the financing terms, I specifically do like to dig into the ecosystem strategy of the company to understand how they're going to get there bigger and faster. Because a lot of times the success stories are those companies that are able to build and leverage an ecosystem for a great outcome for the investors. So that's a bit about my background and why I'm here today.
Awesome. I'll just kick you right into question land. And definitely everybody feel free to pop your questions into the chat as well. But maybe we should start off with a bit of definitions. What does an ecosystem really mean for a company? It's not just a network, so much more. What is it?
Yeah, that's great. We should start with a common understanding of what we mean by ecosystem, right? We all have networks. I tend to think of networks though as more of a, you know, static, slowly growing thing that we all have and can tap into. An ecosystem is different in that in the business context, it's entities with some kind of relationship where value is exchanged. So it's more organic and living than say a network where you have, you know, a Rolodex and contacts in LinkedIn. So I think of that, you know, how are entities really working together to exchange value? And it changes and grows constantly over time, whether we're aware of it or not. We have a personal ecosystem, our companies have ecosystems, even, you know, in venture capital, as investors, we have our own ecosystem. And certainly the companies we're investing in have one, whether they're aware of what it is or not. Does that help set the kind of common definition?
Yeah, it does. Absolutely.
And then as a follow-up to that, so you're looking for the ecosystem, we know what it is. How do you evaluate that? That doesn't seem super quantifiable, but at the end of the day, you got to make a go, no-go decision and you need to model it out in some way. What does that process look like for you? What are the key things you're seeking?
Yeah, one of the things I do is I'll ask them, what's your ecosystem strategy? Because it gives me some clues about how they're thinking about how they grow it. And what it means for them, I can certainly, you know, look at a company, do a quick analysis of the space that they play in, look at, you know, their LinkedIn profiles, who do they know, who are they connected, look at where they're located. Location does still matter. And hubs are basically locations that have built-in ecosystems that provide resources to these companies. I think one of the great benefits of people going more remote and teams being more distributed is we can now tap in, the company can tap into multiple hubs. You know, maybe they have somebody in Silicon Valley, but you don't have to have the whole team here. And if you have people in locations that can help drive your commercial sales, your partnerships, your hiring, there's a lot more leverage to that company than somebody who is in a very static location where they cannot tap into a support system. So I'll look at that. I'll look at their partnership strategy. What kinds of companies are they partnering with and why, you know, for integrations, for channel sales, to improve their product and build a moat. So I look at that very, very, very carefully. Certainly the competitive landscape, you know, who are they going to have to react to? Who are they going to have to try to one-up? To understand that dynamic, certainly any kind of government or regulatory issues that could come to bear on them. Do they understand what they are? Do they know how to work that system? Ultimately, though, as an investor, I know that somebody in the company's ecosystem is probably going to be their acquirer. So are they thinking about the end game? You know, who could potentially acquire us and how do I start building those relationships today so that there's some interdependency and exchange of value? Before the, okay, we're now getting offers, how do I cold call into, say, Cisco to see if they want to build on a, you know, make a bid on us? That's not a great way to sell a company. You want to do it with people that you're already working with.
And that kind of links right up to one of the questions that Thomas is posting here as well in the chat. It's important for companies to build ecosystems, but when it comes to kind of longer term relationships, nothing like a GP and LP relationship when you want to raise multiple million dollars for your next fund. How does that fit into your thinking around ecosystems, the GP and LP relationship and how GPs should build?
Yeah, that's a great question. As investors, we have our own ecosystem. And I tell every company, including us, like start with understanding your status quo. What do you already have as an ecosystem? So it's your GPs, and they're even their family members, right? Is your spouse a chief counsel at Airbnb, for example? And how do you tap into that? So understanding your ecosystem, so your GPs, your LPs, your service providers for financial backend, your lawyers, the hubs you're connected into. At Mighty Capital, one of the things that makes us unique is we're the exclusive venture capital sponsor of a massive ecosystem called Products Account. Which I think I may have mentioned, but it's a network of some 300,000 product managers. But when we go to fundraise, that's when we seem to most acutely think about our ecosystem for deal flow as well. But that tends to be a rote process that you put in place, and there's a lot of networking involved in that. But we find, like, in fundraising, it's like, okay, your current support base of LPs, who do they know? Like, who's in their ecosystem? Are they working with registered investment advisors, for example, who are already familiar with the fact they're invested in, say, Mighty Capital? Do they have other clients that might be looking for venture capital? And, you know, with our co-investors sometimes during fundraising, companies, other VCs that we've invested with who are same size, occasionally we'll compare LP referrals. So if we have LPs that are looking to diversify across this asset class, for example, how can we share into that? So that's some examples of it, but definitely fundraising is where we really test our ability to tap into the ecosystem and not just our network. Because when you're asking somebody if they're interested in the, if they know somebody who would be interested in the opportunity to invest in venture, there's value exchange there. You know, they're giving their contact access to something special. And you want to kind of reach through them to get to that person to bring them into your LP network. I hope that addresses kind of where you were going with that. But the one thing I would point out there is it's happening whether you're aware of it or not. And the more you think about it strategically, instead of letting things evolve organically, the more efficient you're going to use your resources and kind of go where the puck is going, so to speak, like right ahead in the direction you really want to go in.
That's a good segue, actually. So go where the puck is going and be
deliberate. I used to live in Canada, so sometimes these hockey analogies.
Fair enough. Makes a lot of sense. So somebody's listening, they bought into it, they want to think strategically, they want to get started. What do you recommend? What are the first steps, other than obviously, you know, take stock of what you have now? What are the keys to success in building a community like that?
Yeah, start early. Right. So especially, you know, when we look at a new fund or a new company, start early in your inception because of going where the puck is going. And then I actually think it's fun to do a mapping exercise, like sit down and map out your ecosystem. And I actually have on our website a blog piece, I think, on ecosystems that talks about the different kind of entities that could be in your ecosystem, your core team, your extended ecosystem. So if you actually map out what you already have today to get an idea of the status quo, and it's much bigger than we think it is, that can be a fun exercise. And then start thinking about, like, your goals. It should be tied to strategy, right? So if it's like we need more partnerships in the Boston area because it's a healthy place to invest in healthcare AI or something. You know, who do we know? How do we get into that? How can we, you know, grow that side of our ecosystem? So start with, you know, where you want to go, like what the bigger overarching goals and strategy is. Come up with, initially a few things you can do to grow that side of your ecosystem, and think consciously about those that you want to really impact more directly and those that you're happy kind of letting organically grow. You can't control your entire world, right? You can't control the whole universe, but where can putting your resources make the biggest bang for the buck? And it does need to start from the top and be somewhat strategically driven. Otherwise, you have kind of a circus where a firm has this ecosystem and people are running around doing all kinds of initiatives that take a lot of time and resource and may or may not move the needle. So think about those measurable KPIs, and that can be really hard. I used to work in strategic business development, and in a big company, people will always ask, what do those people do? Like, how do you measure what they do? Because it's very long-term sometimes, the return that you're getting on that investment. So you always need to show, like, what you're trying to achieve, sometimes in smaller chunks to get to a bigger effort, and then prune it. It's important to cut the dead weight and stop investing resources into things that are not producing results. That's maybe a big difference between an ecosystem and a network as well. Who cares if our network has 3,000 people? But an ecosystem where you're investing a lot of resource and time into something, you want to feed the winners, you know, feed those relationships that bring you value and cut the dead weight.
In your kind of trial and error process of getting to the point where you're at today, What did you learn? What worked? What didn't work? How do you do the pruning? Maybe some good little war stories are appropriate now.
Yeah, that's a good question. When we start, especially complicated deals or relationships, we end up getting really invested in them because of the time and effort and start to lose objectivity. So I think it can be good to bring in, you know, viewpoints that haven't been as close to the process to get their take on it. We even do this at Mighty Capital on deals that we invest in. The investment team, we have three GPs. We would never have all three on a due diligence, partly so that somebody is a little bit more detached and can ask, you know, have you looked at this? Have you considered that? Another, you know, kind of war story. When I worked for the crypto company, the encryption company, I put a partnership together, a joint venture with another company that was going to work with us on product development around e-commerce security, you know, back-end financial transactions. This is early in the days of e-commerce. It took a year to put this together. 6 months in, I could see they were not going to, this was a war story because it was painful and expensive, and I had to admit this wasn't working. I could say they were not going to live up to their obligations on development and marketing. So I had to go to our CEO and say, I got to send a termination letter to these guys. I think we really need to cut the cord. And it would have been easy to let it languish and pretend there were successes, but you have to make those hard decisions sometimes. Another thing to be careful about, I think, some hard lessons companies make exclusivities, right? So if you're going to do some kind of partnership or alignment with somebody where there's an exclusive relationship, you really need to think about what you're giving up in exchange for that. I know I when I invest in a company, I hate to see they have some kind of contract with a long exclusive because it's going to really limit their ability to get acquired. Unless it's, you know, 6 months with a giant to help build a product that they can then sell more broadly, like that's okay, but you really need to think about what you're doing when you commit to things like that.
Well, let's pick up on that because you mentioned it twice, and the other side is the bragging. So yeah. What are some of the great success stories you've seen is where the egg ecosystem has created really good results, either in just, you mentioned acquisitions a couple of times, but just kind of anything that pops to mind there.
Yeah, and when a company partners with other companies, it kind of runs a spectrum of simple to complicated. So simple things are signing up for AppExchange at Salesforce or, you know, these cookie cutter programs, pretty low effort, low risk, maybe not huge return, to really complicated things like that joint venture I mentioned. Kind of big successes, and you don't have to be a big company. Like clearly, I mean, Apple with the iPhone didn't just iterate on the iPod. They created an ecosystem of content that created experiences that made people want that iPhone. That back when I remember the US carriers saying, no one will ever pay more than $150 for a phone. You know, now it's like you don't feel like you're even middle class if you don't have a $1,000 iPhone in your pocket, right? And it's because of the ecosystem. It's not just for the product and the hardware. It's what you can do with it. But you don't have to be Apple size to take a page out of that playbook. We have a portfolio company called Canela. They have a service called Canela TV, which is over the top streaming video content for Spanish speaking people in the US. So culturally relevant content that before they launched the service, they set up an ecosystem of the library. They went across the world and found the best Spanish language content from multiple countries, not just Mexico, which is what most providers do. Sewed up a lot of the great content. And so they launched with a ready-made ecosystem, and their growth has been phenomenal and exponential. Now they're expanding into Latin America. They're expanding into music. So building a big content ecosystem there. And they'll expand into Brazil, and which means going Portuguese. So you can take a playbook from what these big companies have done without being Apple-sized. But they were able to bring that value to the table right away instead of just launching a product and then filling it with content, which is maybe what Nokia did back in the smartphone days, to be honest. They're like, here's our beautiful product. Now people fill it with content. And it didn't quite work. But once we got beyond text messaging and, you know, basic browsing. So,
And that, you know, beyond text messaging, basic browsing, I think what's also happened over the last few years is that there's been a lot of hype around how do you automate community building, or how do you put rails behind it that's a bit more technology driven than just humans doing things. What have you seen work in terms of automation or using technology to build ecosystems? Is it worth doing? Is it really just still a, you know, labor intensive piece of work that where you can't put a bot to do all the hard grind out? What is your thinking around using automation for?
Yeah, that's a great question. Community building, you know, one of the biggest job growth areas and really hard to find people who have any experience in it, right? Building communities and it's so much more than ever. It's all about the community you're building. And a lot of brands are trying to take back the power of their community. They don't want Facebook, you know, the metaverse to own it, right? So how can they take that back and own their community? Definitely seeing more automation, digital transformation in that area. There still has to be a human touch in terms of what you're providing to that community, right? So automate the pieces you can, but make sure there's unique, you have to make sure there's unique value, unique voice, a human feeling and touch to it. Otherwise, you may have a community of, say, a billion people, and how many are actually actively engaged or care? Like, definitely a lot of these things have bigger numbers. Yahoo probably still has a billion users, as an example, right? But yeah. Who's using it? Yeah.
Gotcha. Makes sense. Well, we went a little bit over our 15 minutes. It always goes so quick, but there's some good questions in the audience there. So we're going to do our first round of breakout rooms. Oh, and by the way, Jennifer, when we come back, we'll always ask the same question, which is trends in ecosystems and communities, or if you want to use it as a chance to plug the core investing process and what you're seeing interesting, you can go that way too. But some housekeeping items for y'all. It's a networking thing. It's not a pitching thing. So please be respectful of that. Be kind to one another. And then also a key thing is we don't send out a participant list for privacy reasons. So if you do meet somebody that you want to stay in touch with, swap details in and there. We also have put the Telegram chat link in the chat so you can join our group and introduce yourself and ask for some stuff over there.
And I'll take it from here. We'll hop into rooms now. It'll be about 10 minutes or so. And I'll give you a question. Feel free to completely get off topic. But if you wanted to stay on topic, then the question is, who are the most valuable people in your ecosystem today and where did you meet them? Maybe there are some lessons to be learned from others and where they found their most valuable players. I'll hop into rooms now and we'll see you back here in 10.
Welcome back, everybody. Hopefully you've had some good conversations. We had a little bit of potential serendipity happening in our breakout room. So hopefully you experienced the same thing. Jennifer, as promised, and as a reminder, you're muted, that what are trends either in community and ecosystem building or just you know, the actual companies you're looking at and the cool things that you want to share with the group here.
Yeah, what are trends? That's a good question. Right before we stopped the conversation, we talked about community building. That's definitely a trend, which is really how do I grow my user base? I think maybe that's what that really means. How do I grow my followings? But more consciously, I think trying to own my community is becoming a big trend, as well as category building. How do I be the brand at the top of the category and fit everybody else, including my competitors, under my ecosystem umbrella? So seeing a lot of that as a trend. I think, you know, in the blockchain world, certainly, like how can blockchain and crypto be used to tie together, you know, new ecosystems, new economies, extend old ones. So those are definitely trends. Digital transformation, right? How do I take an old dusty industry? Like we saw something in trucking logistics yesterday pitch us, you know, how can, you know, these older industries build out their ecosystems, that, you know, their awareness of what they can do to really transform and be relevant 100 years from now. So that's a trend. And I think, you know, the other big trend is culture, thinking about how our ecosystems impact our culture, and they do. Like everybody you bring into your world, it changes your view. And you need to think about that sometimes when building your ecosystem. I know at Mighty Capital, even with our LPs and an offsite, we had a session on what kind of culture do we want? What defines us common values? And it was amazing how much they love that. So that's a trend I'm seeing a lot of driven by companies that are really focused on it. I think I mentioned Airbnb earlier. They're really focused on culture as part of their ecosystem of all these hosts and experiences, companies and people they never met. So how do they create some glue? So there's a commonality there. So I think that's a trend. And I'm sure people have other ideas about trends they've seen in this space though. And maybe, you know, one I'd like to see that we were talking a bit in our breakout about, you know, learning from the old days of how venture capital grew up. There isn't enough kind of looking back at real world use cases and what's been done and what works. So, you know, everybody likes to reinvent the wheel, unfortunately, but there's a lot to be learned from not even just 50 years of Silicon Valley history. You go back a few hundred years, you'll find venture capital, right? Mm-hmm. So, and ecosystem development. My high schooler's learning about the Columbian Exchange right now. So that's really interesting, you know, the trade of goods and what that meant for building interdependent economies and unfortunately how it led to slave trades and, you know, what were all the impacts of maize, of corn being of interest to Europe, right? So, yeah. And sugarcane, yeah.
Never thought of that. Cool, thank you. A lot of thought nuggets there, so appreciate it. I think we're going to do one more round of breakout rooms and then that's okay. Bring you back just a couple minutes before, but I don't know why I'm talking. I like this is your bit.
Yeah. Hopping on to another round of breakout rooms. It would be fantastic if you could share with each other which ecosystems you're part of and then what they've kind of, what you've contributed and what they've contributed to your professional and personal life. You might be able to stumble into each other's ecosystems there, especially used to be groups with a fence around it. So, I'll pop you into rooms now and, love to hear what everybody thinks later.
All right, everybody. Hope you had a good breakout room 3, depending on how we count these things, and met some interesting folks along the way. But we do like to end right on time sometimes. So this is a weekly event. This is the, I forgot to mention at the beginning, I'll flash a slide because you know you need to see the number. This is our 79th weekly one. We don't really take weeks off, but next week is R&D for crypto returns with Ledger Prime. It's going to be a very interesting one because Ledger Prime is a very, well-known name in the industry, so you're going to learn quite a lot. Reminder, December 9th, which is next week, is the New York event. If you're going to be in New York, come join Tarun, who is hosting it. And we do have the Telegram group, so please join it. Ayla, are there any talking points that I missed?
No, I think that's probably it. We're kind of racing towards the end of the year, so we do have a few stuff planned for every single week until then. But a quick ask, if anybody has interesting speakers that you would like to share with us, we'd love to have them. We're just planning out a Q1 of next year. So we're keen on anything metaverse. If you know somebody who is an expert on that, we'd love to feature something in that bucket. Anything Web 3.0 would be interesting, but please suggest.
Oh, and that is a good point. Our next fund that we're incubating is a Web3 VC fund, specifically focused on the play-to-earn space and more generally gamified labor in a decentralized global manner. So if you know anybody that is really, really interested in that, we are actively recruiting GPs or people that want to be participants in that. So definitely shoot them our way. But yeah, outside of that, thank you everybody for coming. And Jennifer, thank you very much for donating some of your wisdom to the crowd here.
And thank you. It's a great way to start my morning. So,
oh yeah, because you're on the West Coast time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thanks so much. We appreciate your time.
All right. See y'all next week. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Diffuse Tap with Ayla Krem and Kenny Estes. If you enjoyed these conversations, join us for the live version every Wednesday-ish at 10 a.m. Central. In addition to the fireside chat, the live event features 3 rounds of networking in small groups with alternative fund GPs, LPs, and supporters from around the world. Log on to www.diffusefunds.com to register yourself now.